This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, the 30th of August, 2007. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. On today's newscast, we'll hear from Capitol Hill, where early progress reports on Iraq are discouraging some Congress members. The Ramallah-based Palestinian government decides to shut down more than 100 Palestinian charitable societies. And remembering those missing by forced relocation and secret detention on International Day of the Disappeared. All that and more after the headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with today's headlines. An unexpected turn of events has saved Texas death row inmate Kenneth Foster from his scheduled execution tonight. Katie Heim reports from KPFT in Houston.
In what many are calling a stunning move, the Texas Board of Pardons and Parole voted 6-1 today to spare the life of Kenneth Foster. The clemency recommendation came less than 6 hours before his scheduled execution. This is a rare move in a state known around the world for its routine executions, but Foster's case is different from other prisoners on death row in that he was neither charged nor convicted of murder. Foster received the death penalty for driving his companion, Mauricio Brown, away from a murder scene. Mauricio Brown was executed last year. Kenneth Foster was convicted under Texas's controversial Law of Parties, which carries the same maximum sentence as murder. Governor Rick Perry issued a statement at noon today confirming that he will commute Foster's sentence to life in prison. For Free Speech Radio News reporting from Houston, Texas, I'm Katie Heim.
A report compiled by the Virginia Tech Review Panel has concluded that the school's authorities failed to take proper action to prevent what became the largest school shooting in U.S. history. On April 16th of this year, student Sung Hui Cho began his shooting rampage by killing two students in an on-campus dorm. Hours later, Cho fired on engineering students in their Norris Hall classrooms. Cho killed 32 people and injured 17 others before shooting himself. The panel found that school authorities failed to avert tragedy by not calling off classes after the first incident. The panel also concluded that privacy laws possibly prevented the university from identifying Cho as dangerous and disturbed. Virginia Governor Tim Kaine.
We have to dedicate ourselves to making them clear, but we especially have to give clear guidance to people working on the front lines about what they can do and what they can share if public safety demands it.
In other news, immigration agents arrested over 160 people on Wednesday in a raid at a chicken processing plant in Fairfield, Ohio. 61 detainees who are either single parents or who have medical conditions have been released on notice to appear before an immigration judge. 20 of the detainees have been charged with state crimes, including document forgery and identity theft. No legal action has been taken against the company. Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr has announced a freeze on the military operations of his Mehdi army on the heels of major clashes during a Shiite festival. But not everyone in the militia seems to be observing the ceasefire. Hiba Dawood reports.
Muqtada al-Sadr ordered a 6-month suspension of Mehdi army military operations on Wednesday after members of the militia were blamed for a clash with security forces which resulted in the deaths of 51 people. The violence erupted on the streets of Karbala as over 1 million people celebrated a major religious festival. An Iraqi reporter who did not want to be named comments that there is no sign of the Mehdi army today in the Shiite stronghold of Sadr city.
There's been a lot of pressure on the Mehdi army. In some cases, U.S. soldiers deliberately try to humiliate them. I guess they were trying to drag them in clashes. This is a very strong wave that all Iraqi parties know that they cannot stand against. So their best plan is to lay low and let it pass.
Al-Sadr has indicated in a written statement that a ceasefire is to identify rogue elements within the Mehdi army, suggesting that militiamen who violate the freeze will be identified as traitors. Today, suspected Mehdi army members burned two offices of the Supreme Iraqi Islamic Council, a political rival force for followers of Al-Sadr. This is Hiba Dawood for FSRN.
A national day of action organized by Chile's unions and social movements demanding better wages and an end to free market economic policies turned violent in the capital, Santiago. FSRN's Jorge Garretón reports.
Workers marched peacefully by the thousands in cities across the country Wednesday. But violence erupted in Santiago after the government prevented unions and workers from marching to the presidential palace. The government's decision to block the march led to fights with riot police forcing business to close early. Youth lit bonfires and erected barricades in Santiago suburbs last night and fought running battles with police. More than 600 people were arrested, including members of the media. This morning, the Minister of the Interior minimized the demonstration and its demands, saying the marches were poorly attended. Workers are fed up with the low wages, demanding an increase of the $273 a month minimum wage. Some 80% of workers earn much less of what is called an ethical, livable monthly wage of about $400. The country's influential unions are threatening a national strike if the mobilization does not yield results. For FSRN, this is Jorge Garretón in Santiago.
Four Colombian soldiers have been sentenced to 40-year prison terms for killing three union leaders in 2004. Mike Caesar reports from Bogotá.
The soldiers had claimed that the three unionists were guerrillas killed in combat. But the court determined that the soldiers had framed the labor activists by placing guns in their hands after they were already dead. The court has ordered a further investigation to determine if superiors to the three soldiers participated in a cover-up. More union leaders are assassinated annually in Colombia than in all of the rest of the world combined. Most of the killings are blamed on right-wing paramilitary groups, which allegedly often cooperate with businesses and with the regular military. The plight of unions in Colombia has moved congressional Democrats and U.S. union leaders to oppose a free trade agreement between the two nations. In recent years, the Colombian government has assigned more security escorts to some union leaders and has designated more prosecutors to investigate killings. Colombian government officials point to the latest guilty verdicts as proof that the Colombian legal system can bring unionist killers to justice. For FSRN, I'm Mike Caesar in Bogota.
And those are today's headlines. I'm Shannon Young.
General David Petraeus will give a full report card on the situation in Iraq next month. But early progress reports have already discouraged some Congress members. FSRN's Karen Miller reports.
Representative Michael Akuri, Democrat from New York, just got back from Iraq. While there, he asked the Deputy Prime Minister of Iraq why American troops should stay.
He never answered the question, and I couldn't help but think that if he doesn't know why we should stay, what reason could there be for us to continue at the level that we are at now?
Akuri says the American people deserve something more.
They want us to finish the job and to begin to bring our brave troops home from Iraq. They don't want to hear about 2 years or some vague time next year. They want action. They want to know. They want to see light at the end of the tunnel.
Akuri is part of a growing list of delegates from Congress coming back with reports saying progress in Iraq is not happening. Another report from the Government Accountability Office, the investigative arm of Congress, highlights the ongoing problems in the region. It says that only 3 out of 18 goals set by the Bush administration have been met and that sectarian violence in Iraq is not decreasing. The report is at odds with the positive report the White House gave in July. An internal White House memo charges that the report, quote, is designed to lock in failure. Pentagon spokesperson Jeff Morrell tries to provide some clarification on the GOA report.
Although they are assessing the same benchmarks, the standard by which they assess them is different. And the standard the GAO has set is far more stringent. And that is, I think they have to sort of say definitively whether a benchmark has been met or not. Whereas, as you saw in July with our interim benchmarks report from the president, we're able to say whether there's been satisfactory progress towards meeting the goal.
Tom Andrews, national director from the Win at War Coalition, says the report is telling.
It does not give them the wiggle room that their surge of spend demands. I mean, they're on a very aggressive national campaign to create a very distorted picture in the minds of the American people about what's going on in Iraq, defying all truth. And any report that defies or contradicts the spin that they're laying, they're responding by attacking it.
Pentagon spokesperson Jeff Morrell says the president will wait and see on how to proceed next, but says the country expects some answers.
The president has some decisions to make. I mean, do we continue the surge? Do we for how long and at what strength?
With regard to the upcoming Iraq report in September, Morrell says that information will be gathered from General David Petraeus, but the report will be written by the White House.
I wouldn't hold your breath waiting for printed material from this building. My understanding is there's no written report coming from here, and it's my understanding, furthermore, that there's no written report coming from General Petraeus.
Morrell says General Petraeus will provide some written testimony, but all final approval would come from President Bush. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Karen Miller.
There's no exact figure on how many people around the world have gone missing as a result of armed conflict or international violence, but they're being remembered on International Day of the Disappeared today. The Red Cross estimates that in Angola alone, there are more than 20,000 peasants disappeared as a result of the 27-year-long civil war, which ended in 2002. José Gama is an Angolan human rights activist currently based in Pretoria. He says that mass disappearances have destroyed traditional family structures.
You know, most of those men, they used to be the main supporting on the family. The wife is now surviving on their own. There's no help at all. The kids are living now on the street. Some are stealing, others are taking drugs, and they are being rescued by missionaries.
In Angola, people are still trying to find the fate of their loved ones who either fled to another village or died during the conflict. José Gama.
The government says a radio and TV program that making appeals every day. The family members go there, give their name, and many families have been finding, even though some others still disappear. That is the way the government is doing.
5 years after the end of its civil war, Angola is still recovering, and the government says that resolving the cases of the disappeared is a priority. Gama says that in reality, that's not always the case.
Sometimes there's a contradiction, eh? But the news we got just from TV, that's government TV, you know, they just show us what they want us to see.
On this day, people from Angola and beyond bring attention to those still missing as a result of violent conflicts. FSRN's Babak Bazargan reports from Geneva on the International Day of the Disappeared.
Millions of people around the world have experienced the disappearance of family members in conflicts or other violence. Hundreds of thousands are accounted for in war zones of the former Yugoslavia, Congo, and Iraq.
From the very moment that a conflict begins, we know that there's a battle against time to try and locate people who go missing.
Pierre Krembul is Director of Operations for the International Committee of Red Cross, which plays a leading role in identifying and trying to prevent disappearances.
Because what you cannot achieve in the first few hours or days often makes the difference between finding somebody later or not.
The Red Cross facilitates the exchange of family news, family identifications, Red Cross messages, and proper functioning of morgues for identification of bodies in conflict zones. But are tens of thousands more vanished from the streets in the context of internal violence? All governments must respect detainees' rights to independent and impartial review of their arrest, to appeal their detention, to be treated humanely, and to communicate with their family. Cordula Droga says it appears that in many cases, missing persons have been arrested.
It's quite true. I think we try to have a prevention of arbitrary arrest as much as of against enforced disappearance, because it's part of enforced disappearance anyway.
Nasera Dutour has been without the news of her son, Amin, since 1997.
At first, we were asking them to bring our children back alive. Now the years have passed, and we're asking them to tell the truth and to give us the bodies back.
The Tour son is just one more than 6,000 people officially regarded as disappeared by the Algerian government since the beginning of the civil strife in 1990s. But under a 2005 Charter for Peace and Reconciliation in Algeria, the Tour risks 3 to 5 years in prison for continuing her public search for her son. A convention adopted last year establishing enforced disappearances are crimes of torture. It has been signed by 61 countries, though no government formally ratified it.
The The Ramallah-based Palestinian government, headed by moderate Prime Minister Salam Fayyad, has decided to shut down 103 Palestinian charitable societies. The decision's been rejected by the Hamas government in Gaza and outraged those who rely on these societies for essential support. FSRN's Rami Al-Maghari has more.
Citing fraud and a lack of accountability, the Palestinian government in Ramallah has closed down the activities of 103 Palestinian charitable societies. The Gaza-based Hamas government considers the move a further effort to undermine its standing, as it controls several of the affected charities. Sami Abu Zahri is a spokesman of Hamas in Gaza.
The allegation that these societies are involved in fraud and financial corruption is baseless, as many of them belong to the Interior Ministry, and there is a continuous auditing of their budgets. Definitely, the government and the designated societies will reject such a decision. But we have to refer here to the fact that Fayyad's government, making use of its international contacts, will put pressure on the banks in a bid to weaken performance of such organizations.
Beneficiaries at the Al-Salah Islamic Benevolent Society in Central Gaza Strip, a major Hamas-linked organization that secures monthly allowances to 700 families, expressed dismay at the decision. Halima Abu Isa is a 45-year-old widow, mother of two grown children.
I pray from the depths of my heart that the one who wants to close the societies, may he or she become blind. I currently live under a very difficult situation, and the Al-Salah Society has stood by me and extended its hand for help. Yesterday, I received my monthly allowance of 900 shekels, equivalent to $250. I am a sick woman, and I suffer from pains all over my nerves, as well as a problem with my eyesight.
From Ramallah, Prime Minister Salam Fayyad's administration justified the decision as a part of a government crackdown on corruption. Mohammed Al-Hurani is a senior Fatah leader in the West Bank.
To be objective, I believe that the decision was partially politicized, especially after Hamas has not only closed societies in the Gaza Strip, but has rather taken control over them. I do believe that this decision came concurrent with a developmental plan that is intended at improving living conditions of the middle and lower classes in Palestinian society. And to achieve this end, the authority should adopt centralization in administering service-based organizations.
On Wednesday, the Gaza-based Palestinian Human Rights Center criticized the closures and called on the Ramallah government to withdraw it, as the decision will deprive thousands of needy Palestinians of their basic livelihood. The Islamist Hamas party has been in sole control of Gaza since winning a power struggle in the Strip in June. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas criticized the military defeat of his faction as a call against legitimacy and dissolved the Hamas-dominated elected government to form a new administration in Ramallah. Since Hamas won control of the Palestinian Authority in March 2006 elections, the international community and Israel have imposed a crippling boycott, demanding that the movement formally recognize Israel, renounce violence, and accept signed agreements. For Free Speech Radio News and IMEMC.org, this is Rami Al-Maghari in Gaza.
The Transcarpathia region, the southwest of Ukraine bordering Romania, Slovakia, and Hungary, has long been a transit zone between East and West. With the expected inclusion of Slovakia and Hungary into the Schengen Treaty in January 2008, this route is expected to become increasingly difficult for those wishing to cross into Western Europe. Amy Miller spoke with refugees and activists about the harsh realities of Europe's border.
The Schengen Treaty allows citizens of member states to travel into participating countries without visa restrictions. Ukraine, neither a member of the European Union nor the Schengen Treaty, has taken on the responsibility of detaining those who illegally try to pass through the borders, as this provides one possible condition for eventual acceptance into the EU. This has resulted in hundreds of migrants and asylum seekers being held in detention centers and camps, which they call lagers, along the border in Ukraine.
I am from Iraq. Iraq now very problem, dangerous cities in Iraq. I'm left in Iraq because, you know, America, you know.
Hader Hayden paid members of organized crime to help him get to Western Europe. The smugglers transported him through Syria and Russia and then by train to Ukraine.
This is mafia from Iraq. After he say, you know, want to come to Europe or another country. I go to this place, I give him money, $6,000. You will, 1 month, 2 months, you will in Europe now. I don't know this is Ukraine. They say you are in Hungary. When I cross the border, soldiers come to catch me with my friend. After that, fighting with me, fighting in Kalashnikov, this is guns. He hit me, after that, take me to police.
Mikola Mikolayevich is the representative of the Migration Service of Transcarpathia region in Uzhgorod, Ukraine. He decides whether to deport, grant refugee status, or detain people who attempt to cross into the West without the proper documentation.
When people have the appropriate documents, they can pass freely through the border. It is only those without the proper paperwork who are in detention centers. If they do not want to leave voluntarily, then they are deported.
However, human rights organizations report that migrants and asylum seekers are routinely detained arbitrarily in Ukraine. They are held in substandard conditions, denied basic procedural rights, or the opportunity to communicate with the outside world.
Take me to this Chob prison. I'm staying 1 month. It's very bad food, very bad soldiers with all men's prison, after that in lager. One room in toilet, this room, and only four beds. We 20, and one bed, three men sleep in this one bed.
While some are deported, the majority are not because of costs. Although Ukrainian law places a 10-day maximum sentence on immigration-related detention, some people have been repeatedly left for months and sometimes years in horrendous conditions. Imprisonment without proper lighting or air circulation, inadequate food, and subjugated to regular beatings by guards. Maria Kurgan from Moscow is an organizer of the No Border Camp, which brought together activists to discuss and strategize campaigns against the problems migrants face in the region.
One of the reasons was to bring this idea of illegalization of people and migrantophobia, the form that contemporary racism exists, that all these measures don't help fight against terrorism at all, and all the things just exactly for control and for putting people in their places, because all this new neoliberal policy influences people, and they got two easy explanations, like migrants are the reason of all these bad things.
With a view of one day joining the European Union, Ukraine has willingly assumed a greater role in enforcing Western Europe's borders. It has become a buffer zone, absorbing migrants and asylum seekers that Western Europe does not want.
In Transcarpathia, we've begun the construction of another camp for 60 people. The European Union, UNHCR, and the Italian embassy helped finance this project. Obviously, Ukrainians don't see this role we play as normal. Because of the border restrictions, Ukrainians also cannot enter, and yet the camps are filled with people from other places.
As the Transcarpathia region has become one of the major periphery zones for filtering the unwanted, far from the eyes of the public, the lager camp Pavshino continues to be a place of cruelty for those who have sought a better life in Western Europe, while the No Border camp has provided some small hope for exposing the problems of migration in this area. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Amy Miller.
Support for U.S. Senator Larry Craig of Idaho has plummeted in his heavily Republican home state since Monday's revelation that the senior was arrested for lewd conduct in a Minneapolis airport bathroom in June. Two Republicans in the Senate have called for Craig's resignation, including presidential hopeful John McCain, and Craig resigned from his leadership positions on four Senate committees and subcommittees Wednesday. Lira Bardis of Radio Free Moscow in Idaho takes a look at the scandal and its political fallout.
At one point, Senator Larry Craig was the fourth most powerful member of the U.S. Senate. According to a poll Tuesday, his approval rating among typically conservative Idaho voters has dipped to 34%, down from 60% last November. Craig pled guilty to disorderly conduct this month based on an incident at the Minneapolis airport in June, At that time, arresting officer Dave Karsnia wrote that Craig had looked at him through the small opening between the door and a bathroom stall and then entered the next stall and participated in foot movements that Karsnia says are common signals used by those who want to participate in anonymous sex. When Craig slid his hand under the partition repeatedly, Karsnia showed him his police identification. Craig, who has been rumored to have engaged in gay sexual activity since 1982, said at a Boise press conference Tuesday that his actions in Minneapolis were misinterpreted.
I should not have kept this arrest to myself, and I should have told my family and my friends about it. I wasn't eager to share this failure, but I should have anyway, because I am not gay.
Craig said that mistake was pleading guilty to a lesser charge, hoping the issue would go away.
I did not seek any counsel, either from an attorney, staff, friends, or family. That was a mistake.
However, the Idaho Statesman newspaper reported that Craig was back in the Minneapolis airport 11 days after his June arrest and complained about his treatment by airport police, adding that he wanted information so his attorney could speak to someone. Fellow Republicans aren't buying it, and so far no members of his party have stepped forward with a strong statement of support for Craig. Senator John McCain said of the situation, "My opinion is that when you plead guilty to a crime, you shouldn't serve." One of the issues in question is the double standard applied to straight sex versus gay sex and the legal workplace and societal responses to that standard. Idaho newspaper veteran Randy Stapolis, who now writes about Northwest policy issues, refers to the case of Louisiana Senator David Vitter, who was not convicted of a crime after admitting to patronizing a brothel in Washington, D.C.
There were not similar calls for his resignation or removal from committee assignments or that sort of thing. I think that part of it is the fact that the gay element is a part of this case and wasn't in that one.
The Bush campaign used opposition to gay rights as a major wedge issue in the 2004 campaign, and Stapolis says the Craig scandal may be part of the mix in 2008.
It adds to the burden, I think, that a number of Republicans are going to feel going into that year. And I think that's what part of the reaction from some of the national Republicans has to do with.
Craig represents a very conservative state with hate crime laws that do not mention sexual orientation or gender identity, and he has not been supportive of gay rights. University of Idaho Associate Law School Dean Elizabeth Brandt has spoken out over the years on LGBT rights as Idahoans considered various ballot initiatives, including a constitutional amendment that passed last fall that defined marriage as a heterosexual institution.
He has a pretty strong voting record against issues that would be of interest to LGBT folks, voted in favor of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, voted to cut off debate on the federal marriage amendment, at least at one point in time. I think his voting record is like a 100% voting record with the Christian Coalition.
Craig has wielded most of his power in Congress on environmental issues, such as logging and mining on public lands. Pat Ford, executive director of Save Our Wild Salmon in Boise, says Craig has thwarted legislative efforts to save Pacific Northwest salmon runs as they quickly slide towards extinction.
I think it's fair to say that Senator Craig has been, since Slade Gorton left Congress, the most active member of Congress in the entire country working to prevent recovery of salmon in the Pacific Northwest.
Craig, who is 62, has said he will announce whether he'll run again in September. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Lee Robartis in Moscow, Idaho.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado.